T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
We're gonna play.
Boys and girls, welcome to the championship rounds of Joe, Low, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game, but with a twist. Low's out today, scheduled to be back tomorrow. John Dickinson in his stead. Today's show, as always, brought to you by Fremont Bank, full-service banking with no compromises. The Chilton Auto Body text line is going to be open for business in this segment. 888-957-9570. 10 years ago, LeBron James and the decision. What was the more impactful, more important free agent signing? LeBron to Miami, Kevin Durant to Golden State. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, there is a report from, and this is what happens when I'm screwing around on Twitter. I start hitting all these buttons and then I lose where I'm trying to be. Mark Stein, who covers the NBA for the New York Times, tweeted 5 minutes ago, the Lakers, league sources say, are expected to finalize a rest-of-the-season contract with J.R. Smith before Tuesday's 11:59 p.m. Eastern closure of the NBA's transaction window. Rosters for the NBA restart at Walt Disney World must be turned into the league office on Wednesday. We didn't talk about this earlier as we were slicing and dicing the entire Western Conference and the eighth seed. But before we jump into the LeBron KD discussion, JD, do you see the Lakers as the favorite to win the whole thing, even though they're down Avery Bradley, who's not going to travel with them?
I mean, the Lakers, Clippers, and Bucks, to me, I'd put all in the same category. I had the Lakers above the Clippers when everything stopped. I think at this point, it sort of gets a reset, and I think I need to see these teams play a little bit before I firmly believe one is significantly ahead of the other. I think losing Bradley does hurt the Lakers, though, and will J.R. Smith offset some of it? Maybe in terms of casual fan watchability, he might, but I don't know if he actually helps you win games.
Dibs, the Lakers is the favorite in your opinion?
No, I still like the Clippers and I still like the Bucks more. And part of it might be my general disdain for the purple and gold. I will always default against the Lakers at every possible turn. But JD's right about JR, JD on JR here on JL&D. The fact that J.R. Smith has joined the team, maybe it just makes LeBron happier because now he's got a buddy, a bubble buddy, so to speak. But J.R. Smith played 11 games last year. He only started 4 for Cleveland. He's washed. I mean, he's straight up washed. He's like jeans from the 80s, Joe, acid washed. It's over for J.R. It's a lot there, I know. A lot there for you to chew on here in the 9 o'clock hour.
The countdown is on. It's time to name the Bay Area's top 10 greatest athletes of all time. Starting Monday, we want you to submit your top 10 list at 957thegame.com. So you go to the website, there will be a place, submit your top 10 Bay Area greatest athletes of all time. Then tune in all next week as each host is going to share their top 10. Beginning Monday, July 13th, we're going to tally up the fan votes to reveal the final top 10 list. Who makes the cut? Who gets into the top 5, and who becomes the official greatest athlete in Bay Area sports history? Get your submissions ready. The debate starts Monday on 95.7 The Game. All right, so last night, whether you saw it or not, you know the story. ESPN had a documentary on The Decision. 10 years ago on July 8th, LeBron James on national television with nothing else to watch that night gets on TV, does an hour-long special, and at the end, he tells, it was Jim Gray, right?
Yep.
Jim Gray. He tells Jim Gray he's taking his talents to South Beach. Incredible on so many levels. What was kind of awesome is that no one really knew where he was going. Usually this stuff leaks and you have a really good idea. Miami was in the mix, but returning to Cleveland was in the mix. The Knicks were in the mix. There was a lot going on with this whole thing. So it was dramatic television. I'm curious as to his signing in Miami versus Durant's in Golden State, which was the more important free agent signing. But before we debate that, JD, going back 10 years, remembering the decision, were you a fan of that or were you against it? Because people are split right down the middle on that thing.
I hated it. I hated the program itself. It was just absolutely miserable and self-serving. I have no problem with the actual decision. I mean, the guy's free to go wherever the hell he wants to go when he's a free agent. I have zero issue with that. But the way that it was conducted, it just left a horrible taste in my mouth.
Dibs.
Right there with him. I mean,
really?
I've never been more fond of JD and his opinion than this very moment. Maybe going back to 2011 when we launched the station together and you and I both predicted that, don't even get me started, Dallas would beat Miami, as you recall.
Yes.
And that unnamed third member of that temporary morning show still owes me lunch to this very day. But we'll go 3 years before 2011, and I'm with you, JD. When that decision, when it was announced that he was going to do an hour-long special to make his decision, I was on the airwaves just ripping him, because how self-serving is that? You're free to go wherever you want, and you're free to do whatever you want, but you're going to devote an hour of time just to sit there and we'll talk about how great and how tough this decision has been and all that. It was nauseating to me.
See, I don't root for him. I liked it. I watched the whole thing. I remember exactly where I was. First of all, there's nothing else on TV. And I do remember following along on Twitter, which was a different landscape than the hellscape Twitter has become today. Not saying it was better, but, you know, it wasn't as intense with the hatred and the vitriol. And people were going nuts. But one thing was, everyone tuned in. Like, it gave us something to watch. It gave us something to buy into. And an hour long, sure. But number one, we didn't know the result, which we do with so many draft picks these days. And then number two, he did raise a bunch of money for the Boys and Girls Club. And that always gets overlooked. I know a lot of people want to just say, you know, self-serving. It was very self-serving for him. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. That's who LeBron James is. Only someone in that rarefied air could pull that off. Like, if Joel Embiid tries that crap, it's not going to work. If Draymond tries that crap, it's not going to work. It really has to be the guy who's a cut above. So I love the fact that so many people have been against it forever. Do you think it did much to his reputation in terms of hurting him adversely? Like, he was viewed a certain way, the prodigy. But did that hurt him going to Miami? Was he considered a villain? Did that make him look too arrogant or egotistical?
Yes. And then when he goes there and they have the big rally and he's talking about not five, not
yeah.
six,
yeah.
not seven, the fact that that clip lives today, the fact that he went up there and had that, you know, he and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and they come out like they're the new version of the Beatles. Guys, you haven't done anything yet. And LeBron, you haven't won anything yet. So let's go ahead and, you know, maybe be a little bit humble. Go out and win three and then four. And then we could talk about
not six,
this.
Not seven.
Yeah, and of course the crowd's going crazy. But I believe they won one. No, they won two in
two.
Miami, right? They won two.
Two out of four.
They should have had the three, but J.J. Barea, J.D., as we've discussed in this program, they couldn't handle J.J. Barea and the plucky little Dallas Mavericks.
They could not, and I couldn't agree with you more. For me, it hurt his reputation because he hadn't done anything at the point in which he did. Like, you're right, he was still a cut above, and he was still going to be a legend and an all-time great, Joe, but he hadn't won anything yet. And he was starting to get the knock of, well, can he elevate a team? So it was the combination of, can he get a team over the top on his own? And it was almost, to some, an admission that he couldn't. So he had to join Dwayne Wade, who'd already won one, and Chris Bosh. And then the three of them were going to team up. And that was going to help put him over the top and impact his legacy positively, where I think for a lot of people it was, do it in Cleveland. Do it on your own. And I know he eventually did, but at that point, I think it definitely hurt his reputation for that reason.
What's amazing is that if they don't have that pep rally where they're talking all that trash about winning 5, 6, 7 titles, a guy who had never won a single title talking about winning 5, 6, 7 titles, if they don't say that, if they just get together as the big three in Miami and they go out and they do what they did, which was 4 years, 4 trips to the finals, 2 championships, that can't be viewed as anything other than a success. You cannot view that as a failure. You cannot view that as underwhelming. You can't sell that any way, shape, or form as anything other than a wild success. Yet because of them dancing at the pep rally and talking about not 5, not 6, you lose to Dallas. You lose to the Spurs in 5 the last year. And suddenly you look at that and you're like, 2-4, that's a bit underwhelming. Because you were talking about winning 6, 7, 8 championships. You only won 2 and you were a favorite against Dallas and couldn't get it done. And then in the other one, you got railroaded by the Spurs. And in the one winner, you needed Ray Allen to hit the miracle shot at the end of game 6 to force overtime so that you could win it in 7. So do you think the pep rally essentially ended up setting the bar so high that there was no way to reach it outside of winning 4 in 4 years? Because I think that really ended up damaging him.
Yeah, and it is the very nature of that soundbite, not 5, not 6, not 7, and those are his words.
Not,
you know,
5, not 6, not 7.
Just never gets old, quite frankly. And the fact that he had this big, the decision, you know, hour-long special and all that, and then it's the not 5, not 6, not 7, he set the standard, he set the bar so extraordinarily high that it was going to feel a little bit like a disappointment, as opposed to, you know, the Warriors situation where, you know, you win a title, then you get 73 wins and you lose the title. And the thinking is, man, that's unfortunate. But you bring Kevin Durant in and the bar gets raised right back up. And then they matched it with the 2 titles. Now, if Kevin Durant would have come and said, hey, not 5, not 6, not 7, and then you only win 2 and then he leaves, it would have felt a little bit like a disappointment.
All right, so where do you land then? Go ahead, JD, I'm sorry.
No, just a quick note. I mean, even to your point about, you know, the 4 straight finals for the Heat, the first one they won was during the 66-game lockout shortened season. So there was even a conversation about, well, LeBron finally won one, but he won it in a shortened season, so maybe that diminished it. I mean, he won, you know, some people still say he won one really in a full 82-game season with Miami. And even that one, you know, you needed the Ray Allen shot in game 6. And they were a favorite in that series, too. I mean, they had home court advantage.
All right. So which was the more important free agent signing? Was it LeBron going to Miami or was it KD going to the Warriors? I was going through this last night. LeBron, for so many reasons, we had been talking about his free agency for well over a year. I remember watching SportsCenter in July, like a year or a year and a half before he became a free agent, where they were focusing on the Knicks. I remember originally it was that he was going to go to the Garden. He wants to play at the Mecca. He's going to go play for the Knicks. And this was discussed for well over a year, and then eventually it happened. It was a major seminal moment in NBA history. He leaves Cleveland, his hometown. He goes to 4 straight finals. He wins 2 there. Durant leaving OKC after losing to the Warriors gives people fodder forever. The Hamptons meetings that he took with everyone, he picks the Warriors on July 4th. He goes from becoming one of the most popular and likable guys in the NBA to one of the most despised, and he wins 2 titles in 3 years. You can define the word important however you want. We can rephrase the question if you'd like, but JD, the most important of the 2 free agent decisions, what would you say it was? Durant to the Warriors or LeBron to the Heat?
It was LeBron to the Heat for me, and it goes beyond just the basketball decision of I want to go team up and win championships. It changed the nature of free agency. It empowered players to say, I don't care what kind of ties I have to the team that drafted me. None of that matters. I am free when I am a free agent to do whatever the hell I want and go wherever the heck I want. He left essentially his hometown. Now, I know he's from Akron and Akron's not Cleveland, but he left his hometown team because he didn't think they could get it done and he wanted to go win a championship with a couple of his buddies. And you know what? That, I think, up until that point, in the NBA, it was something that was frowned upon, frankly. And so for him to do it as, you know, the budding best player in the league and one of the greats of all time when he did it at such a young age, I think it changed the tone and the course of history for every other player that's done something like that since, including Kevin Durant, Like, Kevin Durant did in leaving Oklahoma City, not his hometown team, but a small market team that drafted him. Obviously, Seattle drafted him, and then they moved to Oklahoma City, but he was there, went to a finals with them. Durant makes his move and is empowered to do so without compunction because LeBron James makes his move in 2010. So I think it's bigger than just the wins and losses for me, and it's LeBron.
Agree or disagree, more important decision, LeBron to Miami or KD to Golden State?
I disagree, but he made a very, very good, strong, compelling case because LeBron was the first to do it. But I think the impact of Kevin Durant, the very nature of that super team coming at the time that it did, for the Warriors to have won a title, gone 73-9 and fell short, and then for a consolation prize, getting a player who is generational, he's transcendent, and he joins them. And so the balance of power gets to the point where this team goes out and wins two more. I think that just the on-court impact of Kevin Durant with the Warriors was greater than LeBron's on-court impact of going to the Heat, and also the reverberations that it sent throughout the league to, after Kevin Durant leaves and he goes to Brooklyn, now every other team is looking at trying to shore up their team, adding players, becoming a super team if possible. And by the way, the spotlight now shifts to Giannis Antetokounmpo, as we've talked ad nauseum about, and what he eventually does if he decides to leave Milwaukee. So, JD, you made a great case, but I still think it's Kevin Durant because of the on-court nature of what that meant for the association.
The idea of Durant going to the Warriors, leaving Oklahoma City, the team that had drafted him via Seattle, of course, and choosing to side with the team that he couldn't get past, you know, signing with the enemy. It was one thing for LeBron to choose Miami. Miami was good. They had won with Shaq just a few years prior. Dwayne Wade's one of his best friends. Wade's nasty. You figure, you know what? I've lived my whole life in Ohio. If I'm going to do this, I might as well go somewhere nice. So let's go to Miami. Let's bring Chris Bosh into the mix. Let's go have some fun while we're doing this. You know, they go and they pull that off. And people can fault him for going there, but I think everyone deep down understood you're going to play for a better team. You're going to play for Pat Riley rather than Gilbert and whatever they were doing in Cleveland. Like, they were just a mess. 7 years he was there, they went to the finals once. They never built well around him, ever. And he goes to Miami. He's got this chance under Pat Riley, under Spoelstra, to live the dream and do all that stuff. Durant leaving kind of opened the door for the rest of the NBA. I don't know if there's ever going to be another player who can choose another team and be viewed at the way Durant was viewed for joining the Warriors. He took so much heat. The words people used to describe him, he's rich, but it ain't rich. It's the word that rhymes with rich, and you know what I'm talking about. So a lot of people called him for signing with Golden State because he couldn't get by him. So you almost have to think to yourself, once that happened, LeBron kind of ushers in the player movement era, and then once Durant just kicks down the door as to what's okay and what's not in the eyes of many, anybody can sign anywhere these days, Dibs, and how are you ever going to view it worse than Durant jumping ship to the Warriors?
Right. I don't know what the next frontier would be as far as that goes, other than a player just up and saying, I'm not playing for my current team, and you're just going to hold out and force that team to trade it. We've even seen that. We've seen every scenario play out, including a guy, as you mentioned, who gets eliminated by a team and then immediately joins them. A 73-win team, by the way, no less. So it's not like they were upset. They weren't, you know, stunned. Granted, they had a big lead, 3-1 lead in the series, but then you go and you join them. You're right. I don't know what the next level would be of a player move, JD, player movement to where it would be more shocking than what Kevin Durant did.
Giannis winning a championship this year and then demanding a trade.
That's not bad. Demanding a trade to, like, L.A., for example, to the Lakers.
Or to the Warriors, let's say. Like, yeah, they get through the parade and everything. He's got 1 year left on his deal. I guess there won't be a parade because it'd be 2020 when they win, so there wouldn't be a parade. But, yeah, they win the championship. He's got 1 year left on the deal. Hey, Milwaukee, we did it. I got it for you. I want out. And you know what? I want to go to the Warriors or the Lakers, and that's it, and peace out. Get your trade deals ready for everybody.
Can you get mad at the guy? It's like, here's the ring. I mean, enjoy the championship. I'll always love y'all, but, you know, COVID taught me a lot, and I don't want to live in Wisconsin. I want to go somewhere warm. And, you know, you can't blame these guys, man. When you when you're making that much money, the idea, and it sounds so rude to throw some of these cities out there, but the idea of living in Cleveland or Detroit or Milwaukee, some of these places like Indianapolis during the winter months, it's not that they're bad cities, but it's just it's cold. It's miserable. You're not going to want to spend your summers there either. You're going to want to go somewhere else. You go to Miami, you go to L.A., like you're good. You can set up shop there, and then outside of vacations, you're going to be all right. You're going to get to live like a bigwig. Whereas in Milwaukee, I don't know how you live with a, like a bigwig. Who do you go out with? Like Christian Yelich? Is that what you do? Prince Fielder? Like what's left to do? Robin, San Francisco. Always appreciate the time, Robin. Thanks for the phone call. What's going on?
Hi, you guys. First, I would like to say that, in my honest opinion, everything LeBron does is self-serving and it's masked as giving. Now, that's just my judgmental, narrow-minded point of view. I own that and don't care what you guys think, but that's what I do. Also, Kareem won a championship and left and went to the Lakers. But, you know, and the Lakers were losing. So, but in my opinion, neither one was more important. All of you guys' perspectives, I agree with. Listen, you play to win the game. LeBron gave seven, and I really hate defending him, but LeBron played 7 years somewhere, couldn't get, you know, it wasn't, no player wins by himself. I don't care how great they are. And he got tired of taking that beating. Durant, he gave 7 years. He was a good employee until he no longer was a good employee. Now, the circumstances were different, and people want to justify LeBron's move because he didn't go to the team he kept losing against. Listen, it's the same pot of manure, just different ingredients. I do think that the media, though, in this instance, went in on Durant and the Warriors more so than they did LeBron, the first and the second time he left, okay? And that really always bothered me. Like, the Warriors were not deserving of a superstar, regardless if they won 73 games. Listen, obviously, something was missing, so you go out and get the best. That's what Dr. J and Moses Malone, when they got Moses Malone, did to win. That's all I have to say, guys. Bye.
I like that phone call, Robin. Thank you very much. We always appreciate it. That'll lead into a couple other questions for you. Number one, was LeBron the biggest free agent prize, the biggest free agent of all time? Some will say Barry Bonds to the Giants. That was a huge one. Would it be Bonds? Would it be LeBron? Would it be Kareem? 888-957-9570. And believe it or not, yesterday was a 13-year anniversary of Greg Oden, number one of the Portland Trailblazers. Who was the bigger bust, Oden, Jamarcus Russell, or somebody else? 888-957-9570. We're back with all that next here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dims.
Just three idiots in a room talking to each other with headphones on?
On 95.7 The Game.
It's Joe, John Dickinson, and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Low out, expected back tomorrow. Great to have you with us. Thank you for riding shotgun. It is greatly appreciated as always. 13 years ago yesterday, the Portland Trailblazers decided, not so sure about Kevin Durant. We're going to go with Greg Oden, the big center out of Ohio State, as the number one pick in the draft. The Seattle Supersonics came up next and took Durant. The rest, as they say, is history. Oden would go on to play 105 games, making just 66 starts over three seasons. His first season as a rookie, he was injured. He didn't play a single minute. The next year, he played 61 games, so that's essentially his debut. He followed that up in year three by playing 21 games. Then he was out of the league for almost 4 years before he signed with Miami, played 23 games, and was done. That's it. Greg Oden, was he the biggest bust in NBA history at number one? Would you say, Dibs, I'll start with you, he was a bigger bust than Jamarcus Russell, number one overall? Russell only played three seasons as well, 25 starts, 31 games over that time. Who would you say is the bigger bust?
man, it's a coin toss. My instinct was Jamarcus Russell because we're so close to it, and just the nature of the scissor and him falling asleep in meetings and just all the details, plus the Al Davis angle too, and the famous press conference, JD, when he was firing Lance Lane Kiffin. We can win with Jamarcus. Get over it. Just that whole run of play. But I think when you look at it, it would have to be Greg Oden because of the – not only because Kevin Durant went next, but what the expectations were at the time. Oden was going to change Portland's fortunes forever. At the time, you got a big man. That's what you did. And you had this elite big man. He was such a specimen. He was a grown man, and yet he came out, and the injuries robbed him of his career. It's close, but I would say the Raiders got more out of Jamarcus Russell than Portland got out of Oden.
Wow. I mean, you know, that's a great case, and I think the case for Oden is just the fact that you have to go back to the time, and at the time, Kevin Durant goes number two, and it wasn't crazy to take Greg Oden. Like, nobody was hitting the table that night in 2007 saying Portland should take Kevin Durant. Maybe they were a 1 and a 1A, but everybody was taking Greg Oden if they had the opportunity. I go Jamarcus Russell, though, and the reason I go Jamarcus Russell is because I think the biggest reason why Greg Oden was a bust was health, and I feel like the biggest reason Jamarcus Russell was a bust was because of effort and trying and you know, just – you know, letting himself get out of shape and not working hard to be a better football player. So I kind of put the like, you're a greater bust if it's on you, the reason you're a bust, as opposed to having, you know, a certain set of circumstances like injury that work against you. So I'm going to roll with Jamarcus.
You roll with Jamarcus. Which one is more likely to forecast? So when you're making this pick, you got to put the time and the money into the research. Health, if the guys had serious health concerns, that's all out there for you. I don't know if Oden had that, if he had serious health concerns. We do know that with Russell, you probably could have done some research to figure out whether or not he loved the game, right? That's what we always hear about the Niners. They want guys who just love the game. Everyone's looking to build teams with guys who love to play football, who want to play football. I'd have to imagine that a handful of interviews of people within the organization and people around Jamarcus Russell could have told you he was lazy, right? Like, it's not like you're going to be able to keep that thing a secret, and then you show up in the NFL and it's like, surprise, I don't want to go to meetings. Surprise, I'm not going to do the work. Had y'all fooled, was working really hard at LSU, and now I'm not. So which is the one that it falls more on your plate? Would it be on the Raiders, like you're saying, JD, because they should have been able to unearth the fact that this guy didn't love football?
Yeah, the Raiders deserve more blame than the Blazers, without doubt. Well, yeah, to me, there's no question about that. I mean, the Raiders clearly either didn't do their homework, or what is worse than not doing your homework is maybe doing your homework and not caring. And I think that was potentially in play when you look at Al Davis. I mean, I think you could make the claim that the Raiders probably did talk to people that said Jamarcus isn't what you want. And Al Davis was so just his own person that he believed that, no, Jamarcus was going to come and be a Raider and be a different guy than he had been at LSU. So the malpractice, it's far more on the Raiders for making a poor decision.
I agree, and I don't think that at the time that the Blazers took Greg Oden that anybody would know or understand or expect what the NBA would become, where the big man basically has gone the way of the dodo bird in most cases now with everyone hoisting threes. So if you could go back to 2008 and forecast the way the game would change, I think Portland takes Kevin Durant every day and twice on Sunday. But nobody saw the NBA changing in the profound way that it did with tempo, with analytics, and with the three ball. And to your point about the Raiders, I was reading a piece this morning on Johnny Manziel, who has come to terms that he's probably done playing football. He's a two handicap, Joe. He's living down in Scottsdale. He plays golf 5 or 6 times a week. And he's talking about how, you know, he didn't take it seriously and he didn't really love the game and he didn't have the work ethic necessary. Where was Cleveland at that time doing their homework to where you can ask the coaches and his teammates, you know, about the individual that Johnny Manziel was? So to your point and what JD was saying, I think the Raiders are more to blame for their their poor choice than certainly Portland is. And I'll add one more to the mix from a local angle and a kind of a way to crop dust you, Joe. The Philadelphia Phillies with Mark Appel. You couldn't forecast. You know, they took him number one overall, kid out of Monta Vista High School. You couldn't forecast what was going to happen for his career. And I think baseball is much more of a crapshoot anyway. But as we look at former number one overalls who didn't work out.
Phillies were nothing but swings and misses with number ones. Appel, Pat Burrell, the list goes on and on. Just swinging and swinging and missing with those number one overalls.
What's with your town? Markel Fultz, another number one overall, who's a swing and miss. As I go for a double dusting of you and your Philadelphia brethren.
How do you argue it? Yeah, how do I sit here and argue it? I would counter by saying Iverson was a number one overall. They got that one right. But again, there's a lot you got to outweigh there. The Fultz one, when he was coming out of Washington, was unique because everyone was just convinced that he was the number one guy, right? There wasn't that much of an argument. You look back and it's like, oh, how could it not have been Jason Tatum? When Fultz was coming out, everyone was convinced he was the best in the country. But he played at Washington, so it was like, what was your level of competition? How many great guys did you go up against? And then he got there, and like immediately that whole thing fell apart. I don't even know if that injury, I'd never heard of that injury. Some sort of issue with the collarbone, touching a nerve and making you sensitive and you don't like criticism, and then you force a trade to Orlando. Like that was, that one's really bad. Okay, so put it like this. Oden, Markel Fultz, because he could go on to be great, but that's a terrible pick for the Sixers. Or what about Anthony Bennett?
There it is.
Number one overall to Cleveland. Because if you remember with Bennett, I was living in Vegas when that pick went down. Everyone loved him because he played at UNLV, but everyone knew he wasn't that good. He wasn't good enough to be number one, I should say. So when he went number one that night, Victor Oladipo goes second. This was the draft where Giannis went 15th. You also had, So Otto Porter, Cody Zeller, Alex Len, Nerlens Noel, Ben McLemore. It's not like it was a great draft. Kelly Olynyk was 13. Steven Adams was 12. Dennis Schroeder was 17th. That's a pretty good pick. You work your way through. Mason Plumlee, Tim Hardaway Jr. Rudy Gobert was 27th. That's a good pick. But, I mean, Bennett, do you know he only started four games in his career? And he played four different teams. Cleveland in year one, Minnesota in year two, Toronto in year three, Brooklyn in year four. 151 total games, averaged 12 minutes a game, made four career starts. So Fultz, Bennett, or Oden. You could either argue it as worst pick or bigger bust. Because like JD said, Oden's probably not the worst pick because at the time, everyone loved that pick. Big men don't grow on trees, they said. And that he was a great big man.
Yeah, and it's not been totally written yet for Bennett because he is on the Clippers now, and it's important that we remember that. No, not those Clippers, but the Agua Caliente Clippers, fresh off a stint with J.D. You, of course, have been following the Maine Red Claws, the Northern Arizona Suns, Fenerbahce, the Long Island Nets, Raptors 905, the teams that this guy's played for. He's got a storage unit full of former uniforms, but it's not over yet, J.D., because Agua Caliente, if they do come back in the G League, featuring that former number one overall.
Yeah.
JD, are you with me?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, you lost me there. You lost me about halfway through. I was with you initially, and you lost. No, Bennett, though.
Maine Red Claws, JD? You don't, your favorite Maine Red Claw of all time? You don't have one for me? I thought you were a basketball guy.
I do not have one.
Maine Red Claws.
Yes.
Close. Call them the White Claws, and you're going to have a lot of people showing up. It's White Claw season, boys.
Now, that would be the fan. That would be the team I would be the fan of.
Dibs.
You in the fridge right now.
I just started stacking up on those again. I had not been drinking them, and then I realized it's starting to get hot. It's White Claw season. What's wrong with
that? Yeah, that's been the key to my my Corona weight loss, is transitioning from beer to the great hard seltzer, the White Claw replacing IPA. So down about... down about 250 calories per beverage, and if you math that out to the average day at the office, we're talking thousands of calories not being consumed.
10 to 15 a day.
Remember, every 3,500 is a pound.
Is that what it is, JD?
Yeah,
JD,
every,
for those of you who can't see JD, you've lost, what, 40 pounds from your career high?
He lost a JD. He was two JDs. He lost one of the JDs.
From he lost the D. High, from my career high, it's probably about 50 or 55 for my career high.
But, okay. What was the key?
Changing the habits surrounding drinking was a major key.
Not changing drinking, but the habits surrounding drinking. Let's be clear.
Well, IPAs to White Claws.
Right. You eat, you drink, and then you eat, typically. Like, a lot of times you eat and drink, and then you eat because you drink. You know, that was a big thing. Choosing snacks, you know, differently. You know, finishing the day stronger. You know, I think it was big. You know, basically a cutoff of, you know, 7 o'clock. You're not going to have much.
How did Fat JD finish the day versus Skinny JD?
Great question.
Oh, boy. Skinny JD, it might be like a handful of, like, peanut butter-filled pretzels to end the day, right? With maybe a White Claw or maybe a drink, maybe a vodka soda, something like that, or maybe a couple. Fat JD would finish the day with it would be, it might be like a late night breakfast burrito. And some rolled tacos with guacamole. That's probably your baseline example.
JD, stop. We can only get so aroused.
And that would have been after maybe McDonald's for lunch.
So it's going later into the night. It's heavier. It's worse for you. It's accompanied by booze. And then it's the pass out. So it can all just sit there in the gut and just marinate overnight.
So good.
Exactly. It's pretty easy calculus there, boys.
A lot of people, oh, man, what's the science of losing weight? I remember one of the first times I saw you after you dropped all that weight, and I was like, man, how'd you do it? You're like, you know, I just kind of started exercising and not eating as much. I was like, that sounds reasonable. That sounds like something I could do. Now, I have chosen not to do that. I've gone the other direction, gorging myself late into the evening, drinking barrel after barrel of wine with no regard whatsoever. But, Tibbs, I had to ask you this before the end of the show. Oh, wait. EPL, we need to do locks first.
Yes, Crystal Palace and Burnley today. They are side by side in the table. Their goal differential is nearly identical. Palace loves to play the defensive posture, and they're at home. Neither team in really a relegation situation. We like the draw today, Joe. We're going to play the draw. This one reeks of 1-1. The over-under is 2. If it was 2.5, I think I would like the under, but I'm going with the draw today, Joe. Plus 190, Crystal Palace and Burnley, we're playing the draw.
Love it. Love it. Crystal Palace and Burnley, we're playing the draw. I have a story for you. I'm sure you saw this yesterday. Doug Ferguson, Associated Press. The U.S. Open is going back to NBC. The U.S. Open, the golf tournament, had scheduled, it was a 12-year deal with Fox that began back, I want to say 2014 at Chambers Bay. So it was a 12-year deal for roughly $1 billion. 5 years into it, Fox wanted out. Fox just wanted out. We'll speculate as to the reasons, but they got out. They've been working on it anywhere between 2 weeks and a month, according to Ferguson. So with 7 years left, it goes back to NBC. Now, NBC had the U.S. Open from 1995 through 2014. So they're going to pick up the final 7 years of Fox's deal, but they're going to pay for just under half of the rights fee through the rest of the deal. So Fox is still on the hook for a bunch of this, but they just want it out. I would imagine that's because they're arming up for some NFL packages, and COVID-19 probably has everyone a little bit jammed up from a TV perspective. But to hear the Open is going from Fox back to NBC, what do you think about that? Did you like Fox's coverage with Joe Buck?
I thought Fox got better, and I love Joe Buck, and he was becoming a much better golf announcer. And the analysts that they had, I think they were starting to weed out the bad ones and bring in more of the good ones, but nobody does it like NBC. And by the way, they own a little station called the Golf Channel. So the fact that NBC underneath the umbrella with the Golf Channel as well, it just makes more sense. And plus, it's all of the other events that Fox was having a hard time with, because you got to show the amateur, you got to show the senior amateur, you got to show all the USGA events. It's not just the U.S. Open, and I know that Fox was trying to move some of the coverage to FS1, and the USGA said, no, that's not how we're going to do this. So that was part of the negotiation. It belongs on NBC. I'm happy it's going to be back on NBC.
JD, any thoughts on that? Do you watch a lot of golf?
Yeah, I watch majors. Yeah, so I do watch the U.S. Open. I do watch the Masters. I do watch the Open. I do enjoy that. So, I do watch majors, but that's about it.
Yesterday was pretty fun watching the Travelers. DJ hit one almost in the water. He hit one out of bounds. It's a lot more golf watching, I think, right now nationwide. I haven't seen the ratings, but are you watching any more, Joe, than you normally would an event like the Travelers? Did you check in on that at all yesterday?
You know what I'm doing, honestly? You would think with some of this stuff back, I'd be more involved than I normally am because I've always enjoyed betting golf. I'm watching less, believe it or not, than I would before. My mindset has been as follows. I am anticipating a complete onslaught of sports beginning at the end of July. We're going to have the NBA and Major League Baseball coming back. The NHL might be back. College football, pro football. We're going to get golf majors in the fall. We're going to have the Derby. We're going to have fights resuming. MMA's already in play. Boxing's in play, but we're going to have major fights coming back. There is going to be so much. My thought process has been, this is where we're going to get the mind right. We're going to get the mind right. We're going to do more meditation. We're going to get the emotions in check so that when sports starts, we're ready to hit the ground running. I can't tell you what it's like to have 35 bets in play at one time, but I'm going to be able to once all this stuff comes back, because that's going to be the case. I am in for probably the biggest emotional challenge of my life, so I've been throttling back. I'm checking out a little bit of the fight game because I enjoy that, and I know what's happening in golf because I'll see it on Twitter, and I just kind of have an idea of who won. But in terms of watching it, I'm kind of just enjoying being outside a little bit, getting some fresh air, keeping the mind right, because I'm going into a cave. As soon as it starts, you've seen this basketball schedule. We're going to get 5-6 games a day starting at 10 a.m., 10:30, 11, depending on the day of the week. I don't know. My cup overflow at Thibs, so I got to pace myself here. Casual fan of everything else right now.
I've taken a similar approach, Joe, with knowing that the NBA is on the horizon and you're going to get Major League Baseball and they're going to be going on at the same time, but the NBA games are going to be bigger. But then we're also going to get all the normal news cycle of an NFL training camp going on just beneath the surface there, and that's a lot to keep up with. While you're watching games, it's a lot to keep up with in the middle of the summer where you're basically just watching baseball. But now you're going to have games that matter and the NHL. And other things. So I'm like you. I've taken a hands-off approach.
Man.
A clear the mind, get your steps in, get your walks in, because you're going to be indoors a hell of a lot more starting, hopefully, on July 23rd.
I wish you guys would have given me this advice a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago, because I've been going hog wild watching. My son and I were watching Serie A. He'll throw on La Liga. I'm subscribing to ESPN Plus and all these other avenues so I can get all this live sports. And, the Bundesliga is over. I watched probably 15 or 20 full games. And Union and Mönchengladbach, and we're going through. I'm just watching all this stuff. Horse racing, JD. I've been betting Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Churchill, Santa Anita, Golden Gate. We got the Fair Circuit. So by the time we get to full sports again here in a month, I'm going to be exhausted, Coach. I should have been resting like you, Joe.
You're going to be so overwhelmed. Basketball and baseball are going to start, and everyone's celebrating, and you're just like gutter, all out of breath, tired, exhausted. The guy who shows up for the New York City Marathon after the long night of drinking, who's not capable of even delivering on the first couple miles. Couple minutes left. Nice guy. Fire us a wheel of fun if you don't mind.
Hey, welcome to the Wheel of Fun here on 95.7 The Game with Joe, JD, and Dibs.
Wow, that was a close one.
All right. Here's the first question on the wheel. By the way, Dibs, I like how every single time we mention Bundesliga, you always got to throw in Mönchengladbach.
Oh,
every
time.
Yes, we, because I'm a huge supporter now. We've qualified for the Champions League. In your face, Leverkusen. Now back to Steven for more fun.
Congratulations. All right, JD, I'm going to start with you on this since you are the guest on this program. Which NFL MVP season was more fun to witness? 2019 Lamar Jackson, 2018 Patrick Mahomes, or 2015 Cam Newton? Which MVP season was more fun to witness? JD, I'll start with you.
2018 Pat Mahomes. Because, yeah, he, I mean, just because you're seeing the next generation of greatness right before your very eyes. And a guy that can throw the football, a guy that can make plays, you know, moving around, just an absolute slinger. Pat Mahomes, 18 for me.
50 touchdowns on the season for him that year. That was insane. Dibs, what about you?
I'm going with Lamar Jackson. Just the excitement of, you know, Patrick Mahomes, he can throw it. He's a great quarterback. We've seen guys who can throw it. We've seen individuals who are great quarterbacks, but we haven't seen somebody outside of perhaps Michael Vick who is as electrifying as Lamar Jackson. Every time he goes back from center, if he takes it in the shotgun, all eyes on Lamar. He's explosive, over 1,000 yards rushing. To me, that's one of the most unique seasons in the history of football.
All right, Joe, what about you?
It's actually going to be Cam Newton, and not to round out the bit, in 2015, they went 15-1 and went to the Super Bowl. Early in the season, I want to say they were 5-1 or 6-0, whatever it was, but they were still sitting out there at like 20-1 because no one was buying into them. And if you look through their schedule, which I did, I remember talking about it on this show, breaking down the schedule, and they weren't going to face that much of a challenge. They should have gotten to 13 wins, 14 wins. They set themselves up. You could hedge against them in the playoffs. I end up betting it for a decent amount, and then I let it ride through the playoffs, and I got to the Super Bowl, where, like an idiot, I didn't hedge it, and then they were losing at the end of the first half. Then I hedged it, but I didn't do the math right, and there was a way I could have lost on every possible scenario because I had been drinking and I wasn't paying attention, and I got lucky with the way it broke, where Denver ended up doing what they needed to do. The hedge paid off, and I got half my money back. So Cam Newton would be the choice for me, just from a personal greed perspective.
That's actually what I'd go with, too. I know we got to get to the end of the program, but I'd go with Cam Newton just because with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, every week it was like, well, he can't do what he did the week before. He can't do that. And then he ended up doing it. But with Cam Newton, you knew what you were going to get with the Panthers and that offense that was just going crazy that year.
What are you doing? You know we're up against it. You blow through the break anyway?
Feel like my take was worth it.
Take was pretty good. Question was really good, too. Those were three awesome seasons.
That was a great
JD,
question.
Great working with you as always. Thank you so much for filling in. To everybody else, thanks for tuning in today. Bonte, Steiny, and Guru are up next. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.